Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. This is a popular show on Saturdays. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend of me, Dr. Greg Roscoe, out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly producing it about 2,500 miles to the west in L.A., Mark Mancini, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 60 minutes goes by quick. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, Doc, the threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you're bringing some great guests in here. One of them's in already.
Beautiful. Mark, thank you very much. And again, thanks for getting up early for us on that West Coast. We have a great show today. I'm doing well. The show's doing well. I'm still getting an awful lot of emails. We have a good topic today. We're talking about shoulder injuries, something called rotator cuff injuries. And, you know, we had a show several weeks ago that we were talking about elbows and elbow injury, elbow surgery, using the name Tommy John's elbow, Tommy John surgery. At that time, we had had former major leaguer, Kip Grosjean, talking to us, as well as we had really a superstar orthopedic surgeon on, and that was Matt Varicella. And, you know, I've had a lot of emails off and on about extremity injuries. And overall, that's what brought up the topic today with regard to shoulder injury, shoulder pain. And I was able to get enlisted here our two experts on extremities. We have Dr. Matt Varicella, who is a practicing fellowship-trained surgeon that works on shoulders, knows about the newest techniques. And again, we have Kip Grosjean, again, that helps young athletes stay healthy, rehabilitates them. I know that Kip has his own show at this point, and we can talk about that. But I'd like to open the discussion with Matt Varicella.
Yeah.
Matt, let's talk a little bit about, you know, shoulder injury. And again, there's a lot of different terms out there, whether it's shoulder impingement, rotator cuff tear. Just to finish up here a second, Matt, on intro, you know, the Department of Human Services of the U.S., they account for last year shoulder pain and rotator cuff pathology minimally accounted for 4.5 million clinical visits and approximately 40,000 shoulder surgeries were reported in the year 2022. So, Matt, that lays the stage here a little bit. You know, what's going on with our shoulders? You know, what's the problem? Well, again, what's the anatomy? Go ahead. Take it.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's a beautiful introduction, and it's great to be back on the show. Happy 4th of July weekend, everyone. Yeah, it's we got some good weather here. It's a little humid, but it's okay. We can work with it. So I love the intro and the fact that you alluded to our previous show where we talked about the elbow pathology, Tommy John. And really, it dovetails nicely into this show because, as we alluded to in that previous show, shoulder and elbow pathology goes together. And we'll talk a little bit later on trunk and core dysfunction and how that is all related to this as well, too, because it's all connected. I tell every single patient, it's all connected. And this is really a great topic, too, because in my specific practice, I treat young athletes, overhead athletes, that 13, 14, 15 years old, all the way up until, you know, the overhead laborers, people that are stacking boxes at Walmart or working at the Amazon facilities, and they're doing that. A lot of this stuff, there's two different buckets, if you will, of this type of pathology.
Go ahead.
And it's a little more complicated than this, but I'll give a kind of a superficial overview, is that in one group, you have the overhead athlete, the baseball pitcher, the javelin thrower, the tennis player, the swimmer. And they're constantly in this position where, and if you kind of picture your arm kind of cocked back, pretend like you're throwing a baseball. When your arm gets in that up and out position, we call it abduction and external rotation. When you're constantly doing that motion, especially at a young age, we see what are called adaptive changes to the shoulder joint. And if we're talking about a little leaguer or minor leaguer, you know, kids that are very young age, their bones are still developing. When they're doing that repetitive motion over and over again, what ends up happening is the rotator cuff muscles change in the tension that they're under. So they'll actually get tighter in the back of the shoulder because of that repetitive throwing motion. What we also see too as well is constantly being in that position. Again, picture yourself cocking back, and you kind of feel tension on the front aspect of your shoulder when you cock your arm back like that. And what that does is it stretches out the tissues in the front of the shoulder. So everything, there's always a compromise when you do some repetitive motion over and over and over again. So if you're in that position all the time, think the front of the tissues get stretched and the back tissues get tight. And the other part of that kind of pathology is, think of a baseball pitcher, when they are coming through that throwing motion, and as you get to the phase that we call the follow-through, when that arm is coming through and the ball is releasing, well, that shoulder, the shoulder joint is a ball and socket joint, so that humeral head, the ball part, the part that allows you to rotate in that socket, when you're releasing that ball, the muscles get tight and contract and decelerate, meaning slow down that ball so the ball can stay centered and the shoulder joint does not dislocate. Well, over time, those muscles in the back get tighter and tighter and tighter. So they've done a lot of studies that right. have kind of showed, yeah, I know we're kind of getting in the weeds, all right, but this is a good topic.
Sure.
So when the shoulder starts to change, so when that baseball pitcher is 14, 15 years old, and then eventually, you know, he's, you know, 20, 21 years old, they've done these studies where they've looked at the change in the mechanics. So actually the ball part of the ball and socket, that humeral head, will shift up and back into the shoulder because the capsule of the shoulder gets really tight. Now, what is the capsule? The bones are surrounded by this thicker structure that helps stabilize the shoulder itself. If you're constantly throwing over and over and over again, hundreds of pitches, when there's inflammation in that capsule as part of that healing process, you actually get a little bit of scarring there too. So when that scars down, think scar tissue. Every patient kind of understands scar tissue. It gets tight and it contracts and it can be painful. Well, what it actually does when it gets really tight is it shifts the bone up and back. So then as that athlete continues to throw over and over again, they'll get what's called posterior impingement, or posterior meaning back of the shoulder, or something else we call, and you might hear an orthopedic surgeon talk about this, is internal impingement, meaning it's deep in the shoulder. So what is occurring is those, because the ball part of the ball and socket shifts up and back, it becomes closer to the other bony structures in the shoulder, and what happens is the back of the rotator cuff gets pinched. When you hear posterior impingement,
yep.
That means back of the shoulder, internal impingement. It's implying that that rotator cuff is getting squeezed. Now, over time, the athlete might develop these small micro tears in the rotator cuff muscle because of all of that inflammation, all that pinching that's going on. And then, you know, and we can talk about this a little bit later, but when we order the imaging studies after the clinical exam, you might see some tears in that. And, yeah.
Well, let's get into that. Yeah, that's getting ahead of ourselves here in our discussion. You know, I want to keep it simple. And, you know,
yep, absolutely.
To say, yeah, the body, we use the word biomechanics of how the shoulder works, Matt. You know, as far as when we have, I think you've used the word several times, overhead. And overhead meaning a certain specific type of a function, how the shoulder works, correct?
Yeah.
And, again,
yeah.
where what we're lifting that arm, that socket, because the socket has to rotate up, does it not, when we're doing overhead things?
Well, yes, there's rotation of the ball part of the ball and socket. You will get some movement in the socket itself, but it's mostly that ball part that is moving.
Got it. And, you know, just simply with regard to what we've been seeing here, that the rotator cuff muscles, for some reason, they tend to get weak. And then they may lead, though some of the mechanism that we've seen may lead to a little bit of an impingement in that joint, and that may lead, again, to tears. And then, of course, as you mentioned, they can be very superficial tears, very thin tears, to very thick tears in this muscle. And that usually
Absolutely
is in these
correct.
Chronic situations, correct? I think, you know, you were
correct.
Going on with it, and I just wanted to simplify it a wee little bit.
Well,
and,
that's
you know,
good.
we want to go ahead, you know, as far as where we are, we did talk about swimmers. We talked about baseball players, tennis players. As you mentioned, people that are working in different types of professions where there's a lot of lifting. And that's why we kind of want to bring in Kip Gross. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning? I'm doing great.
Good. Hey,
great.
Thank you very much for being here as well. You know, Matt and I have been up for hours, but I know you and Mark are maybe just getting out of bed. But we thank you very much for doing that. And, you know, Kip, again, we want to bring in, as, you know, we had you and Matt on before about the Tommy John's elbow with our athletes. We want to kind of talk about athletic injuries, again, on that shoulder. And, again, prevention and trying to maintain muscles and maintain these athletes being able to function. And, you know, Dr. Varicella did a great job with regard to explaining the mechanism. He has a lot of detail on how all this works. But I wanted to get into that. But, you know, overall, and I think that with regard to people that are doing certain things, you know, they don't come to you until when? When do they come to see you? You know, is it from a family doc referral? Or what symptoms do they have to say, you know what, I have a problem? How do you start, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the first part of that is that there typically has been a problem for at least several months. And, you know, they'll be, you know, seeing their family doctor. The family doctor will do a physical examination, make sure there's nothing wrong with the neck, then kind of do a detailed look at the shoulder. And I love family doctors, and I think that they are tremendously knowledgeable individuals. I think that sometimes what will happen is if the shoulder problem continues to persist, maybe we've done a little bit of kind of basic physical therapy, get some x-rays, making sure there's not a ton of arthritis there in the shoulder, the patient's not bone on bone. Well, outside of those situations, then they will refer to either an orthopedic sports medicine physician or an orthopedic surgeon such as myself. And that's where we kind of do, we talk about the four pillars of medicine. As part of my history, I'm always looking at, okay, what is this individual's occupation or what is this athlete's position? They may come in and say, I play baseball. Well, it's different if you're an outfielder or a first baseman versus a pitcher. Obviously, a pitcher is more susceptible to have this happen. So, getting
a
detailed history. Yes.
Matt, let me slow you down. All right, if the history is that, you know, we have a pitcher versus a catcher or a first baseman.
Yes.
Oh, that doesn't mean that their pathology is all different. It could be the same problem in each of the thrower's arms, correct? Not different
pathology. That is absolutely
pathology.
True.
Okay, go ahead.
We look at the part of the history in terms of susceptibility. So more than likely, it's going to be a pitcher, but you're absolutely correct, Greg. It could be any other position. And then, obviously, you get through the history part, seeing how long has the pain been going on. You know, is this a 15-year-old kid who's been throwing 100 pitches a game for the last 2-3 years? That obviously clues you into different problems that could happen with that shoulder or elbow. And then you kind of move on to the comprehensive physical exam. You make sure there's no problem at the neck. You make sure You know, obviously we're checking out the elbow.
Sure.
Doing a thorough physical exam of the shoulder. The first thing I'm going to look at is, and I have that individual take off their shirt so you can get a really good look at the posture, because a lot of times some of these athletes will come in, they're very, they might be, you know, they have these huge pecs, and the forward muscles,
yeah,
front muscles can be kind of overly built up compared to the posterior, the muscles in the back. Exactly. So that's the first thing, is you're looking at the posture. Then one of the most important parts of that physical exam is you're checking range of motion. Because this problem that we're talking about, especially if it's in a young athlete, a lot of times you're going to see a reduction in certain elements of rotation. So that's a fancy way of saying an athlete might have loss of what's called internal rotation. So you're always comparing it to their other side, too, to see what might be normal for them. And there's a diagnosis called, the fancy term for it is glenohumeral internal rotation deficit. What that means is that that shoulder has had range of motion compromise, and this problem has been building up for at least, you know, at least a year or so, and that's probably part of how that shoulder's been developing. So that's the physical examination part. We
so,
talked a
Matt,
little bit about
on.
The imaging. Yeah, well,
yeah, hold on a second.
Getting
now,
ahead of myself here.
Yet. You're only really doing pillar one, pillar two. And I, Kip, what do young athletes come to you for with regard to these situations?
The number one reason would be pain, and number two would be a decrease in throwing velocity. So they will notice that there's a change in their speed from what their desired, you know, level is, or what their baseline level is. Those are the two main reasons.
And, you know, with regard to velocity, what do they say? I was throwing 92, now I'm 89, or, I'm 60. You know, what kind of is that range?
Yeah, it's going to be a bigger drop-off than that. And obviously it depends on the level of activity of that baseball pitcher. A 15-year-old is going to be different than a high-end 22-year-old college baseball pitcher,
yeah,
or certainly a professional athlete. But it's typically going to be a reduction, and Kip could probably speak to this more. I would say anywhere from, like, as soon as they lose about 10 miles per hour in velocity, maybe even sooner than that, say, hey, I used to be throwing 92, and now I'm down to 85 or low 80s. If it's a younger athlete, a younger
sure.
pitcher, it might be I was 60 to 70 miles per hour, and now I'm down in the 50s.
And, Kip, you know, with regard to this pitching, does it change the types of pitches that they could throw? Do they say, I can't throw my curveball anymore, my arm hurts? Is there any correlation to that, or I can't throw a slider?
Well, not necessarily so, because, when you got a shoulder injury, you got shoulder pain, or you're just weak in your shoulder, just like he's saying right now, you're going to start losing velocity because your arm's not working properly as it should. And so if you can get that early symptom of, like he's talking about, where you start getting weak, when you start getting weak in the shoulder, you're going to start losing velocity. You're going to start losing your command. You're going to start losing a lot of things because those muscles up there control the whole arm, basically. And, you know, like you're saying, it actually comes from the core and the legs is where all this comes from. And so when you get a guy that starts losing his velocity, that is when you really should start looking at him really closely, really quickly, because he's probably weak in those shoulder muscles. And when you're weak in those shoulder muscles, that's when it tends to lead to pain and then injury. And so that's why you got to keep up on your job weights and keep those
sure.
muscles strong inside.
And Kip, you know, who typically notices that first? Is it something the pitching coach? We have a professional athlete. Does the pitching coach kind of say, hey, this kid's off? Or is the pitcher say, you know, my arm hurts. I'm not throwing as hard as I used to. Or is it a combination of things? You know, is the performance altered by all this?
Everything is altered, because as a pitching coach and watching a pitcher, that's what you should be looking for right away the entire time a pitcher or any position player, anybody is throwing a ball. Is if you look at his elbow a little bit and it starts dropping down, you know, that's
yep.
that's usually a first sign that now his shoulder is getting weak.
Ooh.
And so he probably doesn't notice it as a pitcher, because he's just going through his motions
and he doesn't notice it that well. But once he starts dropping that shoulder down, you notice that something's going on right away, and it's usually coming from the core, coming from the lower half, making his arm drop down. So his shoulder is weakening. And as soon as he starts getting to that point, you've got to really start getting him back in and doing those Job exercises to strengthen all those rotator cuff muscles in there. Because if you don't, once one of those goes, your baseball career is pretty much going to be finished, because we can do things with the elbow these days, but with the shoulder, it's just not the same. Mm-hmm. So you got to stay on that and keep those muscles strong.
And well, if I can, we'll talk about Job exercises in just a second here. But question for both of you: does it make a difference if the thrower is right-handed or left-handed with regard to what's going on? Are both, say, architecturally, Matt, you would know better than I would. Is the architecture of the right and left shoulder the same, whether it's a left-hand thrower or a right-hand thrower? Any difference?
Well, in terms of the anatomy, it's very similar. Sometimes, and that's why I was kind of alluding to as part of that physical exam, you want to check both sides. It's the vast majority of times it's going to be that dominant side. Terms of anatomy, they are structured the same.
And then, so therapy-wise or pathology-wise, the pathology could occur on either side, depending on how much usage, et cetera, that we've talked about.
Absolutely.
And then, what we'll do at this point, I didn't want to get into therapy yet, but I'd like to, we were doing, pillar one, pillar two, and Mark Mancini has questions for us already. So I'd like to go to Mr. Mancini in the studio right now. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, we got a lot of questions, and I don't want to, keep you guys from that great interview you're doing. Let me bring in Dalen from Chelmsford, Mass, talking about sore elbows. What's the key where the rotator cuff goes? Is it just a sore elbow? Is it a tired arm? That's a great question for you guys as far as his question, but I don't know the answer, so I'm going to turn it over to the professionals.
Yeah, do we have enough information here to help this guy?
Well, from my standpoint, what I would tell this individual is that it's all connected. So earlier on when I was talking about the pathology where, again, if you picture your arm in that cocked back position like a baseball pitcher, over time, in order to generate more velocity, and Kip can speak to this as well too, you get more of that external rotation, really cocking it back. There are pictures floating around on the internet of some of these individuals. Pedro Martinez is a classic example of really how they kind of cock that back. If you can picture, if you do that motion yourself right now, the more you cock that back, you can kind of feel that stress on the inside part of your elbow. So when those rotator cuff muscles, when the shoulder muscles get weak, we also call them the shoulder girdle muscles, the weaker they get, well, something else is going to suffer there. Not only does that shoulder joint get compromised, but the joint next to it will get compromised. And in this case, it is the elbow. And just by default, because of that anatomic position, it's going to be the inside part of the elbow. That's the Tommy John situation.
Wow. And, Kip, what do you notice also about their throwing, the whole coordination with their legs and back?
So, what he's talking about right there is so true, about the cocking of the arm when you're throwing the baseball. The more flexibility you do have, the better you're off you're going to be. And that's where a lot of guys get in trouble, is they're just not flexible enough. They don't warm up properly, and so their arm does get tight, and so that's when you start getting into the injuries. But, yeah, what you're talking about with me is, like, when I'm giving lessons or watching a pitcher in a game, I always look at the lower half first, because if the lower half, from the core down, isn't doing its proper work and leading the way to the plate, that's when you're going to run into a lot of problems with the arm, because the arm is taking over way too quickly. The arm should be the last thing that goes through to throw the baseball. And so what I'm trying to get at is one of the other things I was talking about earlier, with an elbow dropping, the other part is too, a lot of guys sometimes don't use the lower half properly, and so what they do is their arm gets too high, the elbow gets too high.
Okay.
And that's when I remember you know, in spring training all the time. Guys, you know, they hadn't really thrown much in the off season, and so now when their arm gets too high, the shoulder now is you know, it turns into the impingement more than anything, is because, you know, you're putting so much stress on that shoulder now where it shouldn't be. So if you learn how to use the lower half properly, your arm is going to come through naturally. I shouldn't say naturally, because throwing baseball is never going to be a natural motion. But at the same time, if we can get into the proper slot with your elbow and your shoulder connected properly, now you should never, ever have any injuries or soreness or ever have any pain in your shoulder or elbow. And that's where I like to teach the kids, is to, if we can get that lower half to work properly, now your arm is going to be thrown in a great position where it's going to stay stronger and not weaken up as much. And I think that's what the doctor's talking about right now, is if you stay strong and keep those muscles strong in there, you're going to have a lot less chance of injury down the road.
Absolutely.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, if I can, Skip, how do we teach then, where does the teaching start for pitchers? You know,
well,
who starts teaching these kids?
It's really tough for me to say this. I shouldn't say it's tough to me, but it you know, I don't want to knock everybody down out there, but most coaches don't know mechanics, and that's a big problem in baseball today, is because, you know, they see a guy just throwing really, really hard, and they say, okay, let's start working with you. Let's teach you a curveball. Yeah. Let's teach you a slider. Let's teach you this. But they're not teaching them the proper mechanics of how to use that velocity with their arm and how strong that arm is. And over time, that arm is going to break down, because, like I said, if you don't have a proper lower half, your arm is going to, it's going to break sooner or later. It's just the way it is. Like I've said, I think I told this before, I've called, I can't tell you how many major league pitchers or professional pitchers to have surgery because their lower half isn't working properly. I've only missed on one in my entire career. It was Frankie Rodriguez with the Angels, and he improved his mechanics as he did age. I think that's the reason he never did have to have surgery. But it everything lower half dictates what happens upper half. I mean, that's just the way it works. And once you start understanding that, that is when you can start teaching these kids proper mechanics. But like I said, the average pitching coach out there, even up to the college ranks, they don't know mechanics. They think they do, but they really don't. And that's why you have so many injuries today.
And, you know, very good. And I'll get back to Matt in a minute here. But, you know, is there a fear if you have a young athlete throwing hard, throwing fast, if somebody says, we're going to change your mechanics, is there a fear that they're going to lose some of that speed, some of that hardness in their throwing? Is that fearful that they don't want to change or adapt to a new situation?
Just the opposite. If a kid has bad mechanics, he's throwing hard, and you work on his mechanics to have better mechanics, he's going to increase his velocity, and he's going to never get sore or have pain again. That's the number one thing for me is, you know, I got pitchers that come to me all the time because their shoulders or their elbows are having pain or soreness in them.
Yeah.
And when you have soreness and pain in your shoulder, your elbow, something's not right. And, you know, you got all these pitching coaches out there that say, well, you know, he's got to throw through the pain. He's got to throw through the soreness. No, you don't.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
If you got soreness or pain, you've got an injury. And when you've got an injury, you've got to back off and find out what the problem is. And over time, I've heard so many coaches over the years say, well, he's got to throw through his pain. He's got to throw through his soreness. No, you don't have an idea what you're talking about.
Yep.
I mean, there's a reason why people go to the doctor when they're sore and painful, because there's an injury in there. And when you have that injury, we got to stop,
well,
and then we got to work on what the problem is to fix that down the road. Yes.
Well,
go ahead,
man. Greg,
you see that, man?
I love that everything Kip is saying is so spot on. And I was going to say even earlier on,
go ahead,
when we talk about that velocity coming off, the pitcher coming in saying, I've been having pain for the last 3 or 4 months, or sometimes over the last few years, mm-hmm, and now I've lost 10 miles per hour, they're almost behind the eight ball to start with. And one of the things I always preach in medicine, we're very reactionary, but part of that is the nature of the world and how the healthcare system is too. The front lines, which is everything I'm hearing Kip say, is, and I agree, we're not knocking pitching coaches, knocking coaches, there's a lack of education. So when that lack of understanding and that knowledge, that's what creates the problems. And then if you practice in an area like I do, where everybody's just like, okay, throw through the pain, just, you know, it's eventually going to go away. Just, you know, tough it up. Yeah. By the time they come and see me in the office, they are way behind the eight ball. And the best situation is if we correct the mechanics to start from the very beginning, when they're 13, 14, 15 years old, because as Kip was alluding to, if we end up getting into the surgical treatment options, there's no guarantee with that. And a lot of times the throwing career is over.
Sure. Well, you know, Matt, in a situation that you're in a rural community and things like that, it takes a lot of education to educate coaches and pitching coaches, even if you have people that are pitching coaches. So it's a tough sell. Let's go back to the studio, please. Mr. Mancini, what do you have next?
Yeah, let me bring in Lance from Pensacola. I'm going to take him and another one. I'll get back to you guys. But he basically says, well, how do you prepare so you don't have a dead arm? Is it what Kip is talking about, along with Matt, that you have to stretch? Otherwise, you can tear ligaments in that arm by not properly stretching.
There you go.
And Kip, you know, what's a dead arm? What does that mean?
You know what? There's a lot of different definitions of a dead arm, because I think everybody sooner or later throughout a season goes through a little dead arm period. And to me, a dead arm period, there is no pain, there's no soreness. It's just not there. And so it's almost like you just need to take a little bit of a break with your arm, because you've built up all these innings and pitches over so many months of throwing a baseball, or even weeks, that it's just like, you know, when you go, if you're a sprinter or something, you know, there's just days when I just can't do it very well. You know, your body's telling you know what, you might want to back off just a little bit for about a week and just let those muscles rest in there. And for me, that's basically what a dead arm is. It just doesn't work properly. And it's almost like a phenomenon where what really is it? There's no pain. There's no soreness. It just doesn't want to work for about a week or so. That's all a dead arm really is. And it's not that you can't pitch. It's not that you can't throw. It's just, it's not there like it normally is over time. And that's why I've always said, if you really keep care of your arm and your shoulder and your elbow and keep strengthening up, you're going to have a less chance of having that dead arm period, in my opinion.
Good. And Kip, if an athlete has, quote, this dead arm, they have the arm just not working, is that a red flag that maybe we need to see a pitching coach like you, or go to someone like Dr. Barrichello? Is it on the road that maybe we're going to have a more serious problem and it's time to improve the quality of our instrument here? Could it be a red flag?
It could definitely be a red flag, because, like I just said, I think it's like the calm before the storm, and that's where you got to really get in there and strengthen up those muscles, especially the rotator, and get those strong in there, because the rotator is so small in there. So you got to keep those strong in there. If you don't keep those strong in there, the big muscles take over, and then sooner or later, those big muscles just can't hold on long enough for those smaller muscles.
Sure.
And that's when those smaller muscles break down and tear, and then we got big problems.
Got it. You know, Kip, how do you keep patients out of Dr. Barrichello's office? You know, what are the keys here that you use to keep them away from the knife?
You've just got to work on your mechanics. I mean, if you have good mechanics, in my opinion, you can throw all day. You honestly can throw all day long, because your arm, when I say all day, I mean to a point where you can throw more innings than what, you know, they're telling you can throw. And I've never been a pitch count guy, so to me it's more of an innings thing with me, because it's the getting up and getting down and getting warm and cooling down. But if you, like I said, when I'm a pitching coach, all I look at is the lower half. And if that lower half, the front side, you know, the front hip, is leading the way and he's keeping that front side strong down below, it's going to translate in your arm coming through in the proper slot. And if you're in the proper slot with your arm angle, pretty good chance you're not going to get injured. But on the second hand of this, though, like I've always said, that doesn't mean you can't constantly strengthen your shoulder and your elbow with doing job weights and keeping those muscles strong in there, because if you do, Now we've got a really good chance of staying healthy, where if you don't, it's kind of like flipping a coin and saying, you know what, I feel good, but at the same time, I don't know if I'm going to break down later on. Because I will tell you this also is, just because you got good mechanics doesn't mean those mechanics can't break down. And once those mechanics break down in the game, that's when that shoulder and that elbow, now they go in a slightly different slot. And so now you're running those problems again. That's why if you've got a really, really good pitching coach, he'll take you out at the first sign of seeing that weakness and breakdown of your mechanics.
Wow. I just received an email here through the show, and the question is, does a sidearm pitcher have the same problem as overhead pitcher? Does that make a difference whether they're throwing from a sidearm position, Kip, as opposed to overhead?
You know what? For me, the sidearm is almost like throwing underhand. So I believe you're going to have a lot less injuries with a sidearm pitcher. But then again, like I said, you've got to still have good mechanics to be able to do that, because once your arm, like he was talking earlier, you know, in the cock position, if that arm gets cocked back there improperly, you're going to run into issues. And that's when you're going to run into shoulder problems. And so you've got to make sure that the arm is still working with the lower half. And if you're just using your arm, you're going to break down that arm. It's going to get tired. I mean, and when you start getting tired, your arm gets tired. That's when we run into problems. Your lower half can get tired. That's not the biggest issue, because your arm, as long as you have good mechanics, but once that tiredness comes in the arm, that's when you need to shut it down. So, you know, the sidearm thing, I would say a lot less chance, but again, you're still doing something unnatural to your arm, so you got to keep care of it.
Sure. Thank you. Let's go back to the studio. Mr. Mancini.
Yeah, let me throw one more, and I'll get it back to you. Kenneth, coming in from Peoria, Arizona, basically says what he sees a lot of, and maybe this is the big problem, guys, is a lot of pitchers don't ice down. I don't see it in little leagues. I don't know if it's too young. I don't see it in high school. I'll see it in college in the big leagues. But is that the problem, where icing your elbow down when you're coming out of a game? That's a great question.
Matt, you want to pick that up, or should we give that to Kip?
Yeah, I think Kip probably could have a pretty good perspective on that for sure.
Well, this is where I'm going to probably disagree with a lot of people out there. I don't believe in ice, and the reason I don't believe in ice is because now if you've got an injury, I do believe in ice because I want to take that inflammation out of there. But the problem is, I think people use ice as a scapegoat way too much. And so to me, I've always used the example of, if I just ran a marathon, it's 110 degrees out, one of the last things I want to do right now is jump into an ice bath, because my whole body's going to get shocked. And I really believe that happens to the arm when you ice it. I've never, ever been a believer in icing unless there is an injury or there is a lot of inflammation in there to bring that down. And I always like to say, you know, do some running or get some exercising and you get that blood flowing through there. And that, to me, is going to heal more than deadening that blood and muscles in there. That's just always been my thoughts.
Sure.
So I'm probably going to be disagreed with here, but that's just my always thought with it.
No, I mean, Kip, I'd actually agree with you there. And my main concern too is that, you know, when an athlete's excessively icing down, is there a bigger problem here? And we're just masking, you know, the poor compromised mechanics at the baseline, because that is a lot of times at the root of the problem. And you're spot on in terms of the setting of acute injury to help with the swelling and inflammation. But, I think it is kind of overutilized too.
All right. You know, reciprocally, should one put heat on the shoulder or the arm after a game? Is that necessary?
Well, if we're going to talk about heat, I think your arm's already had enough heat on it as you've been throwing for the whole day. Like I said, for me, what I'd rather have you do is go get a little running in and get that body, that blood flowing throughout your body to start moving all the blood in there, so that capsule in there can now start healing and keep healing on its own, instead of having to do something else to make it happen. And so that's why most pitchers in my day You know, you'd throw your, you'd have your starter, you'd pitch the day one, and then day two, you go out and you run distance. And for me, that not only loosened up your whole body, because you might, the next day, if you pitched pretty good, if you had a good game, your arm shouldn't be sore. It shouldn't maybe a little tight, but it shouldn't be sore at all. And that's when, and then your body, like your lower ass or you know, your hips or whatever, they're a little tight and sore. So you got to get out there and get that blood flow. And next thing you know, you're not sore down there anymore. And I think that translates into the arm the same way. And so that's all I ever did. I never iced. I just got the blood flow going again, and let's get on with it for the next week.
Sure. And, you know, it's just as far as, say, pitching cycle. You know, you were pitching, what, every fourth or fifth day? Was that kind of the cycle they had for major league pitchers?
Yeah, you pitch every fifth day. Like I said, you have your start. You throw your 6 to 9 innings, complete game, whatever. And then that night, you get as much rest as you can and get a good meal in. And then next day you wake up, you go and you run a lot of distance and get all that tightness out of your body. Because like I said, your lower half should be tight the next day, and maybe just a little bit of soreness in your hips and your ass because that's what you're using more than anything to deliver a baseball. And so then the next day is when you go and you throw on the side again and get all that other stuff that's accumulated in your arm out, and you work on a few things as far as mechanics-wise, and then the next day you have an off day, and some people still throw a little bit on the side again at that third day. Fourth day is pretty much just a complete rest day, and then you go back on the fifth day and you pitch again. But I always like to, the next day also, instead of just running, I always like throwing long toss. And it was a very light long toss where, you know, you're getting your arm to be used again. But, again, you're working on your mechanics when you play long toss. A lot of people, when they play long toss, they think they're just working on their arm. For me, it's all about, you know, getting your lower half to have proper mechanics, which translates into the next day getting on that mound again to have to throw on the side so your mechanics are good again. So you got to keep that cycle of keeping that lower half strong. And the maintenance of keeping those mechanics going really good. Yeah. So it's a combination of keeping care of it, yes.
Yeah, and Kip, that should give a pitcher longevity then, correct, in the majors if they follow that kind of a training regime. Would you think so?
I 100% believe so. There's no question about it. And that's why I've always said Nolan Ryan pitched to you was 46 years old. Because his mechanics got better and better and better as he got older. If you go look at him when he was with the Mets way back when he was a reliever and maybe had a few starts, his mechanics weren't very good. He threw really hard, but his mechanics just weren't really good. And as then he got to the Angels and worked with some other guys, and his mechanics got better and better and better. And plus, one other thing that Nolan Ryan did that people don't really know is that he got in that weight room. And he started strengthening those arm muscles. He started strengthening those leg muscles a lot more. And the stronger you get, the more you're gonna be able to last and keep that arm healthy. So it's going to translate into a longer career, just like you're saying.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as just you take that scenario, why, and maybe they do, but why don't pitching coaches look at that and say, here's a system that worked. Let me try to implement that into my athletes? You know, is there an analogy here?
I think it's an ego thing, personally. I think these pitching coaches want to basically say, this is my guy, and I want to take credit for everything, and he's throwing really good. And whether his arm's hurting or not, I'm going to say that I taught him this and I taught him that. When essentially, you're hurting the kid and you're breaking him down.
Yeah.
And so what they do today, I don't believe in it at all. I mean, they don't run. They just do sprints, they do some exercise. But the problem is, everybody breaks down today, and everybody's getting surgery today. So there's got to be a problem, guys. Let's get in Tommy John surgery, and he'll come back next time.
Sure.
And he can throw again in a year and a half, whatever. But there's no need for that. If they do the maintenance prior to all of this, there shouldn't be any of that problem. And then you're going to have a guy having a longer career to begin with. Like I said, Tommy John surgery is not 100%. And so you don't know if you're going to come back. I personally have a friend who I played with Dan Opperman, he had 3 Tommy John surgeries. This guy had phenomenal stuff. And he was the number one pick for the Dodgers way back when, but they basically ran out of ligaments for him is what it came down to. And I couldn't even fathom having what this kid had, what a friend of mine had with the 3 surgeries and 3 Tommy John surgeries, because there's a problem. I mean, the whole thing is you got to go back and find out the root of the problem. You know, people have symptoms, but they don't always know where that symptom's coming from. I'm sure the doctor can say this better than I can, but when you have a symptom, the symptom usually isn't what you're feeling. It's coming from somewhere else, and that's where you got to fix that problem.
Excellent. You know, I have another email here. I know we're running out of time. Mr. Mancini, I think we're going to have Dr. Varicella and Kip Gross back again on this topic, if you don't mind. But Dr. Varicella, I do have a question here that came across my email. And it's a father talking about his college son, who's a pitcher. The father is saying he was told that his son has a rotator cuff injury, and they're calling it a slap, S-L-A-P, a slap tear. What do they do about it? Can you help us?
Yeah, that's a great point. And everything we've been talking about so far in this show has been spot on. The biggest thing that I can kind of tell the listeners right now is that the majority of these situations, even by the time they get referred to a sports medicine specialist or an orthopedic surgeon, the vast majority are corrected without surgery. So I can't tell you how many times I see an athlete who comes in, maybe they were seen by a different surgeon or maybe a sports medicine physician or the family doctor ordered an MRI, and we'll see that maybe there's a small slap tear. And what that is, we could kind of talk about that for a whole show.
Yeah,
but
what's a slap
it's basically,
mean? Can you help us on that?
Well, what that means is that is a tear at the very top of the shoulder, right at the top of the socket. And so SLAP stands for superior labrum anterior to posterior. So what that means is where the bicep tendon attaches at the top of the socket. When that arm continuously gets torqued back, that torques on that tendon and into the labrum itself. So if that's done repetitively over time, that goes along with that internal impingement that I was talking about earlier, where the rotator cuff will get pinched because the ball part of the ball and socket is shifted back. Well, in addition to that shifting back, it also tears on that labrum. So the first thing I would say here is that just because you have an MRI that shows that you have a slap tear or shows that you have some rotator cuff injury, that does not mean that you need surgery. Because a lot of times I see that athlete who comes in with these MRI findings and they say, well, I have a slap tear. That means I need surgery because it's not going to heal unless I get surgery. That's absolutely that's the incorrect way to think.
Not correct.
Because many times outside of a different – so sometimes there's a rare situation, and it's far less common, where if there's different types of shoulder pathologies, maybe there's a big labral tear and the athlete is actually having instability. In those situations, you might want to be a little bit more aggressive and do surgery.
And
so,
Matt, when we're talking about these anatomical parts, in general, we're talking about part of the soft tissue of the shoulder joint, correct?
Correct.
When you
correct.
Use these terms. Okay. And again, just for our listeners, you know, again, you did review it. You know, we have the ball and socket, and then we, of course, have ligaments, and then we have the muscles. And we're talking about muscle tear here. Is that what we're referring to with this slap?
Yes. It's specifically a tear at the top of that bicep tendon. So it's a tendon. So the muscle belly kind of tapers into this structure that's called a tendon, where it inserts at the top of the bone, the socket part. And, yes, you're correct, Greg. That's part of the soft tissue structures right around that shoulder. But as I was alluding to earlier, is that a lot of times I have an athlete and the parents, they come in and they say, well, he has a slap tear. That means he needs surgery. Again, the rare situation is where you jump to surgery. A lot of times, the vast majority, even if they come in with an MRI with that type of pathology and being read on the report, you can correct the underlying mechanics and the symptoms go away. I just had a couple athletes over the last couple weeks where they came in and they thought, well, I have this, my MRI showing this finding. And they said, well, I did, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of physical therapy. Well, you actually have to look into that, because I love the physical therapists out there, but a lot of them, or some of them, you know, there's varying degrees of knowledge about the shoulder joint, knowledge about correcting those mechanics. So what I'll do is I kind of have my therapist handpicked, where if this is an athlete and we're trying to get, you know, him or her back, I'll send them to a specific therapist that I know he or she knows what they're doing. And then, again, the vast majority of times you give it 6-8 weeks and the shoulder's actually improving. And I've saved tons of athletes from surgery in this scenario. So
beautiful.
The other part that I would say is that if you're going around getting different opinions, absolutely seek a second opinion. If you go to a surgeon who just kind of reviews the MRI, does a spotty physical examination, and says, okay, we have to operate because you have a tear.
That's an important point there. Beautiful. And, you know, Matt, someone that comes in with, say, that diagnosis, the family doctor said they had that tear. You would, of course, do the four pillars. You would see the history. You would examine them with the whole routine of exams. And then, you know, I had two questions here. You would probably do an MR as well as maybe an ultrasound. Would you do additional testing of your own to determine that? And then if you found that it was a tear, would you want to refer to someone like Hip Gross for additional help rather than surgery?
Yeah, absolutely. So that would be the study of choice, would be the MRI. Sometimes the specialist will order an MR arthrogram, which means dye gets injected into the joint, and it gives the surgeon or physician a little bit more detailed look at the structures. So you could see how big the tear is, where all the tear is involved. But you're absolutely correct, Greg. In that scenario, I want to make sure, you know, outside of some major injury that's occurred with the shoulder, which, again, is the less common, that's an outlier scenario where it's not going to be as common. You get them into the right therapist, pitching coach, trainer, somebody exactly like Kip Gross who's going to correct the mechanics. And if I were betting, I would say the symptoms would dramatically improve with non-operative treatment and a correct return to throwing program.
Beautiful. Thank you. And Kip, if you were to get a referral from someone that, you know, a pitching coach or from a coach or a friend that said, my son has a tear here and he wants to pitch, you know, what would your overall plan be? How would you go ahead and help this young athlete and then determine whether he could go back into the ranks of pitching?
Well, number one, if anybody's sore as it has an injury, we got to take time off and get that right first, because I'm not gonna let anybody get on a mound if they're sore or have an injury. It's just not gonna happen with me, because we got to get that fixed up there first. And the one thing I've always said to everybody is, let's rehab before we have to rehab. And that usually, you know, takes care of the problem before we even start. And one of the things that you know, people really got to realize is, if you're strong, there's a good chance you're not going to break down. And that's why I always say, let's rehab before we have to rehab, and get those muscles strong in there and strengthen them up. And then we can start getting the mechanics proper down below to make sure that arm works properly throughout the season or however long you're going to throw. But the one thing, you know, that I really want to say today for this whole thing is, pitchers, don't throw year-round. You've got to rest. And catchers, same way. Take time off. Take a couple months off and just stop. Go, you know, go to the beach. You know, go ride your bike. Go play football. Go do whatever you got to do. Do something else, but give that arm a rest, because we all need rest. I mean, it just, you can't continue throwing 12 months out of a year and expect your arm to work properly throughout your lifetime. It's just not going to happen. You know, today's world, you got high school baseball, you got travel baseball, you got all these different, you know, clinics and whatever they take them through. You don't need all that, guys. You don't need all this stuff. Have some fun, strengthen your arm, keep your mechanics proper, and you're going to stay healthy for the most part.
So it's in moderation is what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't. You can't throw 12 months out of a year every year and expect your arm to continue to strengthen and grow and mature like you want it to. It's just not going to happen, because every time you do throw, you're breaking down muscles in there. You're breaking stuff down. So you've got to build it back up. So that's why you've got to have the proper technique and routine to keep those muscles strong in there throughout the year in the first place. So sooner or later, let's just take a month off, take 2 months off, let it rehab on its own, and let it grow, and you'll be shocked at how much better you come back than after those 2 months. And see how much harder I can throw and how much more command I have, because you just don't understand how much wear and tear you're putting on those muscles over the time.
Wow. I mean, I think that's a real tip, you know, for our listeners, because I bet nobody else has ever told these young athletes that, or even major leaguers that they need time off from their profession. Super. And, you know, Mr. Mancini, are we getting toward the end of the hour here?
Yeah, we got about 4 minutes and change. Let me take one more question. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon, basically says, more or less he has a couple questions, kind of a double barrel one. What makes a good pitching coach, Kip? Are some pitching coaches better than others that you noticed in your career? And the other thing is, he thinks, you know, the kids are just wearing their arms out in Little League and everything. They're just not resting the arms. And he disagrees with the ice. He says, well, the ice will stop the swelling in some ways, but you're a major league pitcher that played the game, so I'm not going to disagree with what you're saying.
Wow.
Well, you know what? There are good pitching coaches. There are pitching coaches that just don't know. And, you know, there's a lot of pitching coaches that are more about just learning how to pitch and you know, pitch to hitters. But I think that the best pitching coaches out there understand mechanics and understand how the whole body works in order for your arm to be able to throw free and easy. If you're having to put stress in your arm when you throw, sooner or later it's going to break down. And so if you can keep those mechanics, especially the lower half, proper, then that the chance of the arm breaking down are going to be a lot less. And yes, there's definitely some pitching coaches that know mechanics. There's definitely pitching coaches that don't know mechanics. And so you've got to find those guys that do. And what I would do first is I would have them refer you to some of their pitchers over time and say, hey, have you ever had arm problems? If a pitching coach is pitchers and had arm problems, pretty good chance that he doesn't know mechanics. And to go back to the icing thing, I'm not sure if the doctor was or that knows. I'm sure he does, but there isn't one study out there that can show you that icing helps your arm. There's not one study out there that I've ever known of that says icing will keep your arm healthy. Not one.
I agree.
Wow.
Yep. Beautiful. And, you know, Mark, let's get this wrapped up. I'd like to thank Kip Gross today, as well as Dr. Matt Barrichello. Kip, you know, how can people, you know, get a hold of you? And indeed, you have a new radio show, as well as you have a book coming out too, correct?
Yes, I do. Me and Mark and I, we started a new podcast. It's on Monday. Well, it's on Tuesdays, but this week we're going to do it on Monday because of the 4th of July. It's called the Gross Misconduct Podcast. And, you know, we talk a lot of baseball. We'll start getting guests coming in like myself and a doctor here, and we're going to have a lot of fun with it. But kipgross.com is the website you can go to for me if you want to ask any questions or anything like that, and I'll respond to you anytime.
Beautiful. And Dr. Matt Barrichello, what's the scope of what your practice is and the type of patients that you handle?
Yeah, absolutely. So high school athletes, even younger athletes, we cover a ton of colleges in the area, tons of high schools, up to semi-pro, and I even get referred professional athletes. So that's my scope. I actually have a very busy practice. We do a ton of shoulder, upper extremity injuries. I do, unfortunately, a ton of those surgeries as well, too. I also specialize in lower extremities as well. The best way to get a hold of me, my email is mavarichello@phhealthcare.org. I have a website, www.matthewvarichellomd.com. And I'm always available by telemedicine consultation or in-person consultation. My office number is 814-375-6200.
Super. Thank you both for that. And, you know, I'd like to let our listeners know, next Saturday we're starting a series on talking about cancers of the body. Next Saturday We have a colorectal surgeon on, again, talking about a little gross topic, rectal bleeding. And we're going to start talking about GI cancers. And we have that one. We also will follow with another very important topic of lung cancer. And as we go down the summer here, we're going to talk about lymphomas, leukemias, squamous cell cancers of the head and neck. And then we also have some of our holistic practitioners on talking about coping with cancer and what are some of the natural remedies that may be able to be used to help these patients survive. So, Mr. Mancini, that's what we have going on.
So blessed. And let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, Doc.
If you'd like to get a hold of me, it is GJRMD308 at Outlook.com. We do answer our emails. And if you'd like to call us, it's area code 814-375-0455. And we would be glad to get a hold of get back to you and do the best we can with a response. So thank you, listeners, very, very much. Thank you, Mr. Mancini. Kip Gross, you were outstanding. Dr. Vera Kelly, you were a superstar.
Wow. Thank you very much. My pleasure.
And on that note, have a safe weekend. Stay blessed through the 4th. Don't drink and drive. And we'll talk to you next Saturday, these same times across the radio airwaves. Till then, thanks for tuning in.
Happy 4th of July.